Welcome to Journal Club for January 7th, 2025. I'm Malcolm Diggs. A yellow card is not just a warning in soccer. That term actually has different meanings all over the world. In much of West Africa, a yellow card is a certificate of vaccination for yellow fever. In Thailand, it's a temporary residence permit. In Australia, it's a state-issued clearance for individuals working with people with disabilities. And in the UK, yellow card is a program for reporting adverse drug reactions and side effects. Today's paper is about that last one. Specifically, it's about the large language model, LLM, that researchers tried to fine-tune to make that program more efficient. Let's dive in. In the UK, when there is a suspected adverse reaction to a medication, that incident is reported to the Yellow Card Scheme, a pharmacovigilance program managed by the Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, MHRA. Let's walk through the actual steps involved in a yellow card report. There are seven of them. 1. Observation of an adverse event. A healthcare professional, patient, or caregiver notices a potential adverse reaction to a medication or vaccine. 2. Submission of a report. The incident is reported through the Yellow Card Scheme's website, mobile app, or a paper form. Details usually include information about the patient, the suspected drug or vaccine, the reaction, and a list of any other drugs the patient is taking. 3. Data review by MHRA. MHRA receives and reviews the report to assess the severity and likelihood of the reaction being linked to the drug or vaccine. 4. Signal detection. Data from the report is combined with others to identify patterns or signals suggesting a possible risk. 5. Investigation and analysis. If a signal is detected, further investigation is conducted, which may involve expert review and consultation with healthcare professionals or manufacturers. 6. Action is taken if necessary. Depending on the findings, actions may include updating product information, issuing warnings, or in extreme cases, recalling the drug or vaccine from the market. And 7. Optional feedback to the reporter. In some cases, the MHRA may follow up with the reporter for additional details or to provide feedback on the report's outcome. The entirety of today's paper is actually focusing on steps 2 and 3, the submission of the report and the review of the report. Everything else I just told you is just for context and because I thought it was interesting. There is a process I didn't mention yet that actually spans steps 2 and 3. The information that gets entered in step 2 will likely contain narrative paragraphs and sentence fragments that have references to the patient. These could be pronouns or phrases like the patient, or they may be a string that identifies the patient by name. Full names, like John Smith. Partial names, Mr. Smith, John, J. Smith, or initials, JS, J, or S. The UK has very strict patient privacy protection laws, so it is critical that yellow card reports be scrubbed of anything in that latter group, names, partial names, and initials. Imagine that you are the engineer who built the yellow card submission system. Reports are coming in, and names need to be redacted immediately. Human manual review is an option, but ideally, you'd want these kinds of identifiers redacted from the reports automatically before any human sees it. The question is, how do you go about doing that? Imagine you're writing a function called redactNames. It takes one parameter, a string. Your function needs to accept a string, replace any names with a series of asterisks, and return the string. It needs to handle all the corner cases I mentioned above, full names, partial names, and initials. But remember, people's names may have any kind of capitalization or no capitalization at all. They may be one word or one letter or a series of words and letters. A name could be two words or three or four or more. There may even be standalone sentences that contain nothing but a name. And in other cases, there may not be any names in the passage at all. Think that's not complicated enough? It gets worse. Medical writing is often chock full of what are called medical eponyms. Diseases, conditions, surgical techniques, and more are often named after the person who discovered or popularized the knowledge of them. Take, for example, Parkinson's, named after James Parkinson. Alzheimer's, named after Alois Alzheimer. Hodgkin's lymphoma, named after Thomas Hodgkin. Down syndrome, named after John Langdon Down, and Crohn's disease, named after Burl Crohn. The list goes on. And your function shouldn't redact any of these eponyms, because they're not human names when used in this context. They are medical information. Can you think of any standalone function you could write, any procedural algorithm, or any regex expression that you could create that would do this job? I can't. If there's a standalone way to do this, I certainly can't think of it. Not without a database or a list of every possible name, and then another list of every possible medical eponym. When you step back, it's surprising to think about how hard this would be to do with code, because it's something your eyes and brain can do easily. You can glance at a paragraph, point out the names of the patient, and ignore the eponyms. And you could do this whether you've ever seen those names or heard of those eponyms or not. Why is that? Well, with this kind of problem, our brains are looking at the context. We're thinking about the other words in the sentence and what they mean. We're also considering other sentences we've seen before that fit a similar pattern to this one. Our brains aren't only using deductive reasoning, we're also using inductive reasoning and stored information. This is a complex thought pattern that is less like procedural code and more like model inference. So when the authors of today's paper were faced with this very problem, redacting the names in yellow card reports, they knew a standalone procedural algorithm wasn't going to get the job done. They needed a trained model, and this paper is all about how they trained and validated it. Before they could do anything with a model, they needed training data. They used both the I2B2 UT Health Corpus and a series of reports from the Yellow Card program itself. The I2B2 Corpus is a dataset of annotated electronic medical records. It does not include actual first names, last names, or other real personal identifiers. Instead, it contains surrogate identifiers that simulate personal information. These surrogates are annotated and labeled as if they were real names or identifiers. And the Yellow Card program provided text narratives from reports that had been previously submitted. The final dataset was labeled with annotated tokens categorized as either name, indicating personal identifiers, or non-name. The purpose of this label structure was to allow the model to learn the distinction between identifiers and non-identifiers. The data was curated to include a mix of short and long tokens to ensure that the model could handle short strings, like initials, but also longer strings, like full names. With their data in place, now they had to choose the kind of model they wanted to train. They considered a few options, including hybrid models that combine rules with machine learning, RNNs, and transformers. After weighing the trade-offs between accuracy, scalability, and adaptability, transformer models like BERT seemed to present the best way forward. Unlike RNNs, BERT, the bidirectional encoder representations from transformers, could process entire sequences bidirectionally, capturing contextual nuances that are critical for identifying names. So they went with that. But with this choice, the task that lay ahead of them wasn't training from scratch, it was fine-tuning. Training an LLM from scratch is possible, but it would have meant starting with a model that had no prior knowledge and would have required enormous amounts of data and computational resources to learn everything from the ground up. Instead, BERT is what we call a pre-trained model. It doesn't need to be trained from scratch. It already understands general language structures, patterns, grammar, semantics, and context, and it just needs to be adapted to fit their specific task. That's what we call fine-tuning. Fine-tuning BERT involved modifying the model's final classification layer to output binary predictions, name or non-name, for each token. They trained the model using categorical cross-entropy as the loss function and the atom optimizer. Training was conducted for 5 epochs, and they applied early stopping to prevent overfitting. To handle the token length limitation of BERT, which was 512 tokens per sequence at this time, longer narratives were split into smaller segments, with each segment processed independently. This ensured that the full text could be analyzed without truncation while maintaining the context for each segment. Once that first phase of training was done, they evaluated the model's performance on precision, recall, and F1 scores. They also computed false positive rates to measure how often non-name tokens were incorrectly flagged as names. They conducted separate evaluations for short tokens, that's less than or equal to 3 characters, and long tokens, greater than 3 characters, to account for the fact that the model might be great at one and terrible at the other at the same time. At this point, the model achieved a recall of 87% and a precision of 55% overall, although for much longer tokens, recall got as high as 94%. Obviously, they weren't happy with these numbers, so they tried to bump everything up. They experimented with an ensemble method that combined BERT predictions with a rule-based classifier. The rule-based system used regular expressions to capture patterns like salutations and titles before or after names. For example, doctor before or MD afterwards. They combined the rules with BERT by just chaining them with an OR operator. So if either technique returned true, the ensemble returned true. But this didn't work out too well. They saw reduced precision and a higher false positive rate. Of course, they still weren't happy, so in the end, they recommended a post-processing step that would send the reports for humans to review. Not ideal, but seems like a reasonable compromise for now. Remember that with a recall rate of 87% and a precision of only 55%, the system misses more than 1 in 10 names, and incorrectly flags nearly half of its identifications as personal identifiers when they're not. In this field, where patient confidentiality is paramount, these kinds of lapses are unacceptable. So for now, this seems like a good starting point for future research, but in my opinion, it's far from production grade. That being said, if you'd like to learn more about the fine-tuning process they used for BERT, or explore the results in more detail, I'd recommend that you download the paper. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Journal Club. Hope you enjoyed it. Malcolm Diggs signing off. See you tomorrow.